Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Retire While You Work podcast. I'm Carson Odom here at Adams Wealth Partners. Also have Miles Zuger alongside me. Thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, everyone.
What episode is this?
Episode 111. I think we've probably been doing this a little bit longer than people have realized. It's had different forms to it, but probably for the last maybe 6 months or so, we've kind of had more of this kind of open discussion format that I think we've enjoyed a little bit more than maybe how we were doing it in the past.
I agree. 111, but who's counting? I'm kind of interested in what we're talking about today. The whole world of rental properties, and does it make sense to have an investment property in your portfolio at any time in your life? And are there alternatives? And I know in the world of, I mean, just for a second, talking about the world of real estate in general, I'm pretty sure I've seen recently there's an affordability index when it comes to real estate, and it takes into account like the median household income. It takes into account the average house price and also interest rates. So it factors in all three of those variables and maybe something else. And essentially, housing is the most unaffordable it's been in U.S. history because you've got a combination of insane appreciation in house prices over the past, really, 15 years, but especially ever since COVID. You've got mortgage rates that are the highest they've been since before the financial crisis in 07, 08. And you have medium household income that has been increasing, but just not at the rate of real estate increasing. So all that added up together, and you have real estate that's incredibly difficult to purchase for a lot of people, unless you're paying cash or you're well established, you have a high income. And alongside of that, not only are just prices in general high, but I don't think in the elevated price areas across the country, rental rates have not increased at the same pace. So then when you're looking at an investment property, the numbers just aren't making as much sense as they used to. Can you still find great investment properties in every single city? Yes, absolutely. The numbers are just harder to come by than they were, you know, in 2012 at the bottom of the housing crisis when numbers were a lot lower. So,
by making sense, I mean, that's kind of subjective. I think I totally understand what you're saying there. It's, I think most people buy rental properties for the cash flow, the extra cash flow coming in. Some people buy rental properties for the appreciation that you get with them and just hope that maybe the mortgage or the rental income covers that mortgage payment each month. But with that, you know, you're leaving yourself a little open or susceptible to something bad happening if there's a major repair that's needed on the house and you have no cash reserves, because every month maybe a couple thousand's coming in from rent, and with rates where they're at, a couple thousand's going out towards a mortgage payment makes things just a little bit trickier, is kind of what Carson was saying there. And obviously it makes a lot more sense if you're renting something for $3,500 and your mortgage is $2,000 and you have a little bit of buffer there each month. So
yeah,
it's just definitely not where things were, you know, sitting here in 2024, not where things were in, you know, 2020 to say 2022.
Oh yeah. Because in 2020, 2021, prices hadn't quite had their pop, their total pop yet, and interest rates were still 2%. So if you were looking to get into a rental property, you could sit here and say, okay, I'm going to buy this rental property, I'm going to finance it at 2-3%, or do a big cash down payment, and all of a sudden your rent is far outpacing your mortgage payment or other monthly obligations. So it makes sense from not only now you're factoring in appreciation on the house, not even counting if you do any sort of rehab to improve the property, but you also have an extremely low mortgage rate and the spread is just there. So now you couple it with, you've got to buy a property. If you're going to finance it, you've got an 8-9% mortgage rate, 7-9% mortgage rate. It's just tougher to make the numbers make sense. Again, not saying that they can't. And then of course, numbers can make sense when it comes to if you're going to pay cash for it. So we have clients that pay cash for rental properties, and a good way to understand on a number side of thing, if a investment property, we can talk about the non-number side of things of whether or not it makes sense here in a second. But on the number side, let's say you're looking at an investment property, and for easy math, let's say it costs $100,000. I know that doesn't exist much nowadays, but you want to buy a $100,000 investment property. And let's say you can rent it out for $1,000 a month. You pay cash, $100,000, you can rent it out for $1,000 a month. That comes out to $12,000 a year. 12,000 divided by 100,000 is 12%. There's a term called a cap rate, and sometimes you use operating income. So technically your rental income minus your expenses, but just for quick and easy math, your yield on the property, you buy it for $100,000, it's giving you 12 grand of rental income each year, therefore 12%. A more realistic number in Nashville might be you buy a property for $500,000, you rent it out for $2,500 a month, that's 30 grand a year. 30 grand divided by $500,000 is 6%. So there's your yield on your cash that you're putting to work, but also that's not factoring in expenses yet. And if you have a mortgage, that's also not factored in yet. So quick and easy, you can have a good yield, 6%. That's a great rate of return. You put $500,000 to work, you get 30 grand a year. That's phenomenal. And in the grand scheme of a retirement plan, it's diversified income. So now all of a sudden, you've got Social Security income, you've got some rental property income, you've got investments from your portfolio, maybe you have an annuity that's dishing out a few $100 a month. And all of a sudden, you put all these pieces together. What a great diversified stream of cash flow coming in every single month, as opposed to just having Social Security or having Social Security plus relying on your savings, something like that. So
yep.
It's a good way to diversify income, and it's not for everybody. Why not? Why would it not be for everybody?
Yeah. I mean, I think a question we just get in plan, and well, I feel like first off, kind of around here in like Nashville locally, what we saw is a lot of first time home buyers, you know, buying, let's just use the numbers you threw out, buying their first home for call it five, you know, maybe $300,000 to $500,000, having a 3% mortgage on it, and then getting living there for a couple of years. Maybe their family grows, or they're just want a different place. And so a lot of people, I feel like in that scenario, were just keeping their first home as a rental property that they probably put 3 to 10% down on in most cases. But because interest rates were at 3%, their mortgage was not crazy high. Keeping that as a rental and then going and buying a new house, and with rates low, they were able to put again 3 to 10% down, have a reasonable mortgage, and it kind of worked out that, you know, the monthly income was covering the mortgage and expenses, and it made a lot of sense. Obviously, with kind of what we've said with the rates a lot higher, that's a different conversation now, because I feel like people who are moving are needing to make the monthly payment make sense. They're actually needing to sell their first house to have that cash as a down payment to make that monthly payment make sense. And so I think rentals have maybe become a little bit harder from that standpoint for a lot of people. Kind of talk back to that affordability index that Carson talked about at the start. But who it makes sense for, I feel like we get the question a lot. Hey, do I need to own a rental in my overall financial plan? And one of the first questions that I ask is, you know, like, do you want to? Do you want to deal with tenants? Do you want to deal with what, it's not always headaches, but do you maybe want to deal with the headaches of property and having people living in a house that you own, especially if you're going to be doing it yourself and not working with a property management company, which depending on where you're at can take as much as, you know, 20% of monthly profits also. And so that becomes a cost you need to factor in if you don't want to be getting called in the middle of the night when something's going wrong. So that's one of the first questions I ask is, do you even want to deal with the headaches? And a lot of times people say no, and they say, no, we're going to go with the property management company. And so it's just making sure that the numbers make sense. I would say probably here at our firm, Adams Wealth Partners, probably about a third to half of our clients own some sort of rental or real estate holding outside of their primary residence. For them, it, you know, for most of those people, it makes sense. But we also have had clients in the last couple of years who they were older properties. There was some headaches with those properties. They made the decision with the market at a high point just to offload them, give up that monthly income, even though they had those paid for properties. And I'm thinking of somebody in particular here that, you know, that they went through that process over the last couple of years. And in the last meeting, we just asked them how they felt, and they just said they felt so much better not having to deal with the stress of those rental properties. So it's not all, you know, it's not always an easy street to own rental properties. Like, there are difficulties and challenges that come with that, especially from rental, upkeep, maintenance, all those things. It's not just a straight cash flow that's always coming into your pocket. So I always think it just goes back to first, like, are you wanting to own a property because all your friends are doing it and everybody's doing it and you see a bunch of Instagram or social media posts about how great it is and why you need to own real estate? Or do you want to own it because you actually are viewing this as a piece of your financial plan that makes sense for you and is going to provide income now and in the future?
Yeah, that's good. I have an opinion or a statement. I could be totally wrong. This is just what I think, that I don't think there will ever be more money made in real estate than over the past 15 years or since the bottom of the financial crisis in our lifetimes. That's my personal opinion, because it was the perfect combination of we're coming off the financial crisis. Housing had a huge correction in price. And on top of that, you had the next 15 years at near 0% interest rates. And that is just a combination for a huge surge in real estate. And I just don't think the combination of those factors will be here again. Or if it does, and that opportunity does come again, then it's going to be a tough path to get there, or meaning the economy is going to have to suck or the market's going to have to suck to get back to that point. So when a lot of people are coming off the high of the past decade, 15 years of making insane amounts of money in real estate, and for the average Joe, where you could buy something and it went up 50% in a couple years on everything you put your touched your hands on in real estate, I just don't think that's not going to happen anymore. So then face the realities. Okay, we're at higher interest rates. So now all of a sudden, to be cash flow positive, it's going to be more difficult. Second, what if your real estate, your investment property doesn't appreciate over 2 or 3 years? What if you buy it for $500,000? 3 years later, it's 510. So all of a sudden, you can't count on appreciation factor of just a passive real estate, and you're paying a higher mortgage rate. So all of a sudden, I think the sexiness of it has faded for it being the route for everyone. And I say all that to say, I think there are still people who are super successful at finding investment properties and making them work. And yep, ultimately, that's what I'm trying to say is, like, the ability for everybody to be a rental property success, I think that season has gone. And now I think more, it takes a very specific professional to be a real an investment property manager, make the numbers work. So if you're just looking to diversify your passive income, be patient with it, because there's going to be properties that pop up. And I think over the long term, if you're younger, you're trying to forecast, how do I want my financial plan and balance sheet to look over the next 20, 30 years to set me up for retirement? I think real estate's a good thing to have. Have your primary residence, maybe have a vacation home you rent out, or an investment property that you get some mailbox money one day when the mortgage is paid off. I think that is great to incorporate in a financial plan to diversify your income streams whenever you retire. But just know, there's also different ways you can do it. You don't have to just buy a rental property. There are, once you go into REITs, Miles.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to touch on kind of what you said too. So I do agree with that, but then I think back to, like, my own personal situation and, like, looking to buy a first house in 2020 and just looking around and, like, having lived here for, you know, 6 or 7 years at the time and being like, man, all this real estate feels so expensive, like feeling like I missed out. And then buying a house in 2020 and watching real estate prices across the city go up by like 50% or more. And so, yeah, like, I think I agree with what you're saying, but I also struggle with it because I thought that way at one point as well. And that it didn't end up being the case, but where does it go from here? I agree. I think it is a tougher road, but it's not to say that that can't be done.
For sure.
And then, yeah, I think you just need to enter, if you're buying a rental property, you need to enter into that, like, I'm not saying you need to have a worst case scenario like at the top of your mind, but you need to be thinking about, like, how does this go really well or how does this go really bad? If you're buying a rental, like, we always recommend, if it's truly a rental property, you should probably have about 20% down on that, because it's going to save you on some PMI, prime, you know, insurance, mortgage insurance there. It's going to help keep other costs down. And it just is, like, it's just a good sound financial move versus putting, you know, a minimum payment down on rental property and then kind of breaking even month to month. That's where people start to get into trouble, I think. But then also just entering into that with like what your realistic expectations are. Like, you know, to Carson's point, I might pay $500,000 for this property, and it in 5 years it might only be worth $510,000. Not thinking you're going to buy this property for $500,000, you're going to be breaking even month to month with it, and then in 10 years or 5 years, whatever it is, going to sell this thing for $1 million. Like, yeah, that shouldn't be like the top thought in your head of how things are going to go down. You should be thinking
lowered expectations.
Yeah, lowered expectations. Like, reasonably, I'm going to pay $500,000 for this thing, and if I can, you know, get realistic growth, call it 3 to 5% annually on some sort of real estate property, maybe this thing in, you know, 5 years is worth $550,000 or $575,000. But along the way, somebody else is paying your mortgage on that, and it makes a lot of sense. Or just saying, hey, this is truly a rental. I know cash flow is not the best right now. It's covering itself. It's covering maintenance. But in 15 or 30 years, whatever you put on that mortgage, I'm going to have a paid for property that all I had to do was put 20% into, and somebody else paid the other 80% off. And now absolutely, you have a fully paid for asset worth, again, maybe at that point, 30 years on the road, it's 600, 650, 700,000, maybe more. I mean, it certainly could be more, but just realistic numbers, that's fully paid for. And if I want to sell that to realize other goals, or just keep that as a fully paid for property that's now cash flowing, setting what your expectations are from the start is just, you can't go wrong doing it that way.
That's right. And tax benefits.
Yeah. And the tax benefits that
come with a rental property too. Yeah. I think, yeah, my opinion is out there, but maybe the better way to say it, like you said, is just lower expectations for the next 10 years as compared to the last 10 years.
But we could also be wrong. We don't have the crystal ball. So home prices.
Lots of asterisks.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just touching on REITs. So, you know, sometimes people say, hey, you know what? You're right. I don't want to deal with the headache of owning rental properties. Like, I want to press the easy button. I want to get exposure to real estate inside of my portfolio, but I don't want to mess with that. How else can I do it? So there's publicly traded and privately traded REITs, which stands for Real Estate Investment Trust, where basically somebody else is doing all the work. They're going out and buying, you know, it could be single family homes, it could be condos, could be commercial properties, could be a combination of all of them, and packaging them into, the easiest way to think about it is basically think of it as a mutual fund. So they're packaging these into a fund, and then you own shares in that, of which as prices in those properties are appreciating, your fund price asset is appreciating, and they're paying it some sort of dividend or yield outside of that. So maybe you're getting a 5 or 6, 7% yield and your assets appreciating. Now, obviously that's way different than owning a physical property by yourself or with maybe a partner, but it is the easy button and it allows you to still participate in that sector or get exposure to real estate. And you are going to have muted returns because of that. There's going to be management fees in doing that, but it truly is the easiest way to gain access to real estate without you really having to do so much as like lift a finger.
That's right. There's tons of REITs out there. There's REITs that you can buy that are, like Miles said, publicly traded. You can buy in a brokerage account. There are private REITs, and a lot of the private REITs, you've got to have a certain amount of money. You've also got to have a certain amount of net worth that you put into them. And it's just to limit the risk, because being private, it's not as liquid. So that's definitely one of the risks, is it's not as liquid and you can't just pull your money right back out the next day if you want it back. But they have different objectives. There's single family home REITs, there's condos, there's industrial, there's commercial, office building REITs, you name it, any kind of real estate, data center REITs, there's any kind of real estate you can think of, there's a REIT out there that you can put your money in. That way it's a little bit of a hands-off approach towards investing in real estate. But like Miles said, you're not going to get quite more than likely, you're not going to get quite the investment return if you were to do it yourself, because there's management fees. You're one of a million people invested in that REIT. So the risk and the return is spread amongst a lot of people. But if you just want your fix, you don't want to have to get, you know, your hands super dirty with having your own rental properties, dealing with everything, the tax side of things. You know, you invest in a REIT, it either shows up on your 1099 or you get a K-1 if you're a partner in it. And it's usually pretty simple. So that's just a way to be a little bit more hands-off approach. There's a few different alternatives and a few different ways to get into it. So if anybody has questions, and really just any questions in general about REITs, real estate. Want to run some numbers when it comes to specific financial plan, if it makes sense to you. That's what Miles and I and our whole team here, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. And I would just say, at the end of the day, just do what makes sense for you. Like, just because you see everybody else doing it, it doesn't mean you need to get caught up in thinking you need to have 5 rental properties or 10 rental properties. Maybe you need to have 0, and maybe you don't even need to have access to real estate because you have other parts of your plan that are making up for that. And so just looking at it and truly not getting caught up in the social media craze or real estate or whatever else you might be seeing out there, and just thinking, hey, I want to do this because I'm interested in it. It makes sense for me. I really want to learn about it, have a secondary source of income in retirement, or maybe a third source of income in retirement, depending on your situation. And just looking at it from that standpoint and just saying, hey, I'm doing this because I want to, not because all my friends are doing it. They're telling me that I need to be buying real estate.
That's right. That's good. Make the best decisions for you and yourself and your own financial plan, and learn. Do your due diligence. Ask the right questions. Ask us. Research on the internet. If it's on social media, take it with a grain of salt, everything that you see or listen to, and always ask questions to verify. So,
yep.
Well, perfect. Thanks for joining us. Again, this was episode 111, talking about real estate and investment properties and if it makes sense. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Any opinions are those of myself and not necessarily those of Raymond James. Expressions of opinion are as of this date and are subject to change without notice. The information contained in these podcasts do not purport to be a complete description of the securities market or developments referred to in this material. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but we do not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Every investor situation is unique, and you should consider your investment goals, risk tolerance, and time horizon before making any investment. Prior to making an investment decision, please consult with your financial advisor about your individual situation. Any hypothetical examples are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary. Raymond James does not provide legal or tax services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional.